You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 794 of the Dressage Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Farnam. The Dressage Radio Show is the official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation. On today's show, we're talking all about the 2026 USEF Grand Prix Championships held at the World Equestrian Center in Ocala, Florida, from May 13th through 17th. First, we welcome Jody Kelly Baxley to the show to chat about her impressive sixth-place finish aboard her own Greiton Beach. Jody shares her experience at the championships, her partnership with Greiton Beach, and what it means to be at this level. Next, we sit down with championship winner Elise Gunderson to discuss the unforgettable experience at the championships and her life with her incredible partner, Quintessential Four. Elise shares insight on her journey together, preparation for the competition, and what makes Quintessential Four such a special horse. This is Reese Koffler-Stanfield in Georgetown, Kentucky.
And I am Megan McIsaac from Oregon, Wisconsin, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Welcome to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, Megan. How are you?
I'm getting by. I'm getting by.
I think every horse trainer on the planet is saying that right now.
Show season has begun.
It has begun.
It was Please. A doozy.
Yeah, bring your trainer whatever. Whatever they like. Starbucks, vodka. No, I'm just kidding.
Mimosa.
Bring it all. No. I'm with you. This has just been an incredibly busy season, which is wonderful. I'm so glad people are showing and doing and so many things. I'm with you. Like, because here in Lexington, I coach a lot of adventures and dressage horses. And right now they are all cooking, really cooking. And they're trying to get to the AECs, the American Eventing Championships are here in town. So everybody's trying to do that. And Wow. Yeah, I know. So it's great. It is really great. It's keeping us out of trouble for sure.
I feel like I'm getting into trouble. I don't know. It must be the season, Reese, because I don't feel like I enjoyed showing. Do you feel this way? Like, am I just getting older? Does anyone else feel this way? Because I just want to make a shout out to everyone. Please be safe out there. My first show was a doozy. Like, there were horses getting loose. People, like, we had to share the aisle. And like, it's okay to share the aisle, but people are just like riding their horse and then standing in the aisle. And I don't know how many times I had to ask people to move. And I just feel like we're really unsafe out there. And I'd love to encourage people to make a change. That's how I'm feeling.
Love that.
Yeah.
I think there's so much right now of like, let's think of others. I think so many people are, showing is stressful. Showing is all the things, but like, let's be kind to fellow competitors. I think you and I have always had that message.
Yeah.
Of that, which is.
And I feel like it's just changed this year. And I don't know, maybe it was the first one was just a doozy. And I love showing, Reese.
Yeah,
and
you do love it. You love it more than I do.
Yeah. And I have to say, I walked away from the show going, I did not enjoy it. And I love my show, my winter show season. But I just felt unsafe, and that's me as a professional. And so I just want to ask everyone, look around. It's not just about ourselves. It's also about our fellow competitors. And I want everyone to do well safely. And so that's, I guess, what I wanted to share with the show today. Sorry,
I think
to be.
That's really important.
Yeah,
that's really important. You know, to say that to people. And I think that that's for everything. You know, I have to be honest, I did not go. KDA, it poured rain here at our local show. So honestly, I didn't go. We had shown a couple horses the horse show before in the pouring rain. And I was like, we're not doing this. Like, no. We did this 2 weeks ago. Like, we don't need to do this again. We don't need to do this again. And so that was a good thing, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where you're like, oof, but I agree. Like, showing is so expensive and it's so, but we should be kind and safe and work together. So I hear you.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you told me what happened and I was like, what is going on?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And then also don't forget to bring your show secretary, office manager, EMT, cookies. That's what we do. Our show
team. I love that.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to Lisa Lemke. She always takes care of our show secretary. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. They're doing a wonderful thing for us as competitors. And I wouldn't want to do it. So I am so grateful to everyone who helps us compete. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love it. Well, everybody, keep that in mind as we go through. I think this is going to be a great and inspiring show for you, talking to our national champion and also Jody Kelly, who is just a wonderful horsewoman. I think it's going to be inspiring. So hopefully we'll bring some inspiration to showing and you know, everyone will be fun and safe out there. Well, Megan, we're going to have a quick commercial break from Farnam and Endura Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control.
This episode is brought to you by Farnam and Endura Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. Discover fly protection redefined with Endura Gold, made to annihilate flies, ticks, and mosquitoes with brand new EPA-approved ingredients never seen before in equine care. Endura Gold is backed by science and built for hard work, delivering fast knockdown and up to 14 days of fly protection. Add Endura Gold to your arsenal and upgrade your fly control rotation.
Well, tonight we are so happy to have back on popular demand. She actually hasn't been on in a long time, and I'm so glad she's back to talk about the U.S. National Grand Prix Championships. Jody Kelly Baxley to talk about her Greaton Beach, who is a doll babe. Welcome to the show, Jody.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think the last time we had you on the show, I did not research enough, but I actually thought we had a conversation of what you were doing with Greaton and just how you were taking things slowly. So kind of tell us about your story with him and how you got to the national championships.
Yeah. I now that you say that, you kind of jog my memory. I think the last time I was on, I actually was giving him just a little bit. I had actually backed off of him just a little bit.
Yes.
So it was kind of an interesting place in my training at that time. And I am here to say that it absolutely paid off,
yes,
in the long run. You know, I remember I was saying, you know, I'm just going to do what's best for him and see where we go with it. So I got Greaton as a 3-year-old. He came over from Holland, barely steering. He was broke, but he barely steered. So he and I have been in it from the beginning, showed him all the way up the levels. On and off again, he's always been such a good boy about his environment. So he hasn't been one that had to train super hard, going a million different places, because he was always pretty trustworthy and a good boy about that. But he's really a sensitive guy in regards to doing the right thing. He's really one that always, always has wanted to do the right thing. So I've always had to be very careful that I took things slow enough with him that he understood what was going on. And he's kind of one of those that once he understands the assignment, I can count on him like the sun's going to rise the next day, which is really, really a cool place to be with a horse. And I know it's been built on years and years of a relationship growing, not just in the saddle, but I he goes everywhere. I take him everywhere he goes. Is me taking him. Like, he and I travel together, and we just are a team everywhere. And I think that's made a big difference. But he's a little over 18 hands, and he's a big boy, and he's got a lot of movement. And I always said when he was young, it was like trying to ride like an octopus on roller skates around the show ring. Like, I always swore it felt like he had so many more than four legs trying to navigate around the show ring. And it wasn't to any fault of his own. Like, he tried his hardest, but like, you could, it was almost like we would finish our tests or like go through the test, and I could like almost hear him going, whoa, you know, and like just going around the corners on two wheels like that. And it took us a really long time to not feel like that, because I feel like we would like almost conquer one level. And, you know, as they're going up, you're like, all right, we got this. Then you go on to the next level and it's back on the roller skates again, trying to conquer the next level. And he always was really a good egg about it though. And always very like pretty confident in what he was doing and like, okay, I got this. You know, we'd go through the test kind of going, whoa, but there was never any stress. He was always like, all right, we got this. Cause he understood, again, he understood the assignment. And then as we got, he kind of cruised right through the small tour, maybe a little faster than I had planned. Like we did the national stuff and it went really well. And we did the CDIs and it went really well. And then things just kind of started to fall into place a little bit without he and I realizing it, as far as like after you do a certain amount of things with the, if you have a certain amount of success with the CDIs, then you automatically get an invite for the developing team without applying for it, which I didn't really feel like he was quite ready to be in that position, just because it was, then there's certain expectations. Like once you're on this in the developing program, then there's this expectation in order to keep this. And then there's this expectation in order to get this. And it's all a wonderful program. And I told, and my last horse that was in it totally followed the protocol right all the way up and it was all great. But I had my reservations about him getting sucked into that program from that point on. And I, at the time, Charlotte was the coach and she was amazing about it and didn't put any extra pressure on us. And so it was good. Like we were able to do everything at our own pace, but it's still, there still are certain expectations. Plus he was doing really well. And so as we started the Grand Prix, it was still sort of the same thing. Like we got into the Grand Prix and he was doing most of the movements and he's pretty darn fancy. And so the scores were good, even though we were, there were a few movements like the ones particularly where just honestly there, it took him 3 years to figure out a single flying change. And the ones were even bigger of a mystery for him. Again, just so much movement, his legs going in all directions, like trying to get that down pat was just so difficult for him. And slow over time, he realized that he wasn't doing it right. Like he knew he wasn't coming up with the right answer, but he was a little bit stressed over the fact that he wasn't coming up with the right answer because he just couldn't get it. And so we worked on him and worked on him. But again, like the rest of the Grand Prix was actually quite good. So he was still getting the scores. And so with that, we'd kind of keep on going and fumble our way through the ones. And then he'd start to get a little bit worried about other things just because of that. And, you know, it just got to where, and I think that's somewhere around when I was on the show, Reese.
Yeah, I think you're probably
just,
right.
It just wasn't feeling like the right thing for him anymore, you know? And it was, he was doing, by then we were doing the CDIs in the Grand Prix. And again, getting actually, we were very competitive in them and actually getting quite good scores. We were able to kind of have a hit or a miss with our ones. And because he was a little bit stressed, I'm finding like when he was a little bit more stressed, like he actually was a little bit fancier. So his scores in a lot of areas were actually higher than they are now because of like the anxiety was, you know, makes his knees snap a little higher, makes everything a little fancier. And I just was thinking I said to several people, like, if this is what it means for him to be in the high performance, then I don't care that he does it. It just wasn't the anxiety that he was slowly, that was building, and my happy show horse that I had always had was not there anymore. And so I finished the season of 2024, like in April, March, April, trail riding. We like just decided to like back off, take a deep breath, regroup. And I trail rode for like maybe a month or two or more. and then started him back just slowly at home, like not with any coaches, not with anything. We just started back just playing. And I actually rode him over in my jumping arena way more than I rode him in the dressage arena. I rode him out on the trails. I rode him in my field, like just all different things. Rode him in a snaffle. I don't think he wore his double for more than a year. And just started to play with it. And so by the time you trail ridden him so much, he was needed to get strong again. So we just, you know, did a lot of strength building stuff, exercises, and then literally just started to play with the movements again. And piece by piece, without the pressure of showing, without the pressure of, you know, even though I have to say the coaches were fantastic about not putting pressure on him, there still is an element of pressure of being on the development team and meeting these requirements. You know, I mean, you put those pressures on yourself, even though the coaches were all great. I think there is a certain expectation with that, you know? And so by then it was no pressure. It was just the two of us. And I thought, we're just going to see what you want to do. If I wanted my happy, relaxed horse back. And slowly but surely, things started to click. And, you know, I would have lessons here and there with my longtime coach, Ann Gribbins. And then Ali Brock has also helped me quite a bit intermittently with him as well. And I would have just kind of some check-in lessons, like eyes on the ground, make sure we were headed sort of in the right path. And then I'd kind of back off a little bit. And piece by piece, like, I could feel things clicking with him. And again, like, when he understands the assignment, he's like, I got it. And so piece by piece, I could start to put the test together. And then I was able to do a few national shows. I spent the rest of 24 literally just kind of putzing around. And then I spent most of 25 just doing national shows and just kind of, you know, getting our feet wet again. And like, with no pressure, we would do a few just not any big time shows, just to see how it would go. And we'd do one and it would go well, and we'd go back home and play a little bit again and take the pressure off. And but he had it at that point, you know, because the showing wasn't stressful for him. It was just the movements as a whole. He just was a little bit, and it got to where he knew every time he went down center line, he knew he couldn't come up with the answer. So the shows were becoming more of an anxiety point for him, but not because showing was ever an issue for him. But then after he did a few national shows, like, we walked away from it with both of us going, yeah, okay, that was fun again. Like, we actually enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Like, we both thought it was fun again. Like, we didn't get to the end of the Grand Prix going, oh, you know, and him so stressed. And so we started playing with the CDIs again last year, and that all was good. And he went to regionals. That was sort of my turning point. Like, we went, that was when I finally kind of was like, all right, we're going to set some goals here and actually, like, have the pressure of showing and trying to do well and see what, you know. And regionals went really well last year, and he won the Grand Prix and the freestyle at the Region 3 Championship. So then I was like, all right, we're ready to sort of step back into the big ring and see what happens. And I sat down with my schedule and chatted with Anne, and I made my, and they had announced the Grand Prix Championships, and I circled that, and I was like, all right, that's my goal for the year, and see how that goes. And and we qualified, and it was just really, the championships themselves were so amazing. That experience as a whole is that's going to be something really, really cool that I hope they continue.
Can you tell us about that? Because it wasn't at Lamplight this year. It was at the World Equestrian
It was at the World Equestrian Center. So, yeah. So that's a whole different. So that was, they announced it in the fall that they had Christine Trarig, the coach and the, I don't know exactly what her title is. The chef to keep, I think. Isn't it, Reese?
Yes, I think she is. Yep.
She was the mastermind though behind having this head-to-head competition. And so she really insisted that, you know, the Grand Prix Championships at Lamplight at the end of the summer often have like our up and coming Grand Prix horses, but not necessarily our in the moment top Grand Prix horses, because those horses are all usually coming off of their summers in Europe and are still over there or that kind of stuff. And Christine was very adamant that our big horses headed to Europe have a head-to-head competition with the same venue, same everything. You know, it's one thing to compare scores all season, but for everybody to be in the same moment with the same pressure, She was really adamant that they have this. And so they pulled the Grand Prix Championships out of Lamplight and moved it to the spring, and decided to hold it at the World Equestrian Center just because they have the big stadium effect, which, you know, it did affect several horses. Just going down that ramp into that big stadium definitely got a few's attention. And it was, you know, it was stressful trying to qualify. Like, this was the first like big thing that like we really had to like watch the scores and do all that. And so it was exciting just to be there. Honestly, that was my big goal for the year, was to be there. And the atmosphere within the barn itself was so special. I have to say, like, it was one of the coolest experiences. They had a CDI going on at the same time, but they separated the Grand Prix Championship horses because ours started so much earlier in the week. They had us in a separate barn. So it was all of us in the championships, where it was just us in the championships in the one barn. And they had the coaches and the physio and the vet and like all of the team, everybody was there. And they really, really did an amazing job. Not just them, but the riders themselves. It became such a like everybody cheering for each other kind of a week. Like, it was really, really
cool
experience. Yeah, that you don't necessarily hear about or experience elsewhere in the dressage world. Often, you know, you go and it's just kind of everybody's on their own, and you know, you fend for yourself, and it's kind of a dog eat dog world out there. But it did not have that feeling at all week. And I thought, wow, this is cool. You know, but it was my first championships like that. So I thought, oh, maybe this is what it's like. But I actually heard several very seasoned competitors make the same comment of what a unique group it was and what a unique year it was. And maybe because it was just the Grand Prix Championships, like it was such a small core group that made it a little bit unique. I'm not sure why it had a different feel, because again, it was my first time. But it was truly special and such a fun week. Like, just a fun week from the beginning to end.
Yeah. So it looked amazing.
And I hope they do it again. Christine made a comment that she hopes it's here to stay, and like that we can really collect all of our top riders once a year as like, you know, for head to head. She certainly seemed to be in favor of having it again. And I definitely would vote in favor of it. And as far as there are other riders, I don't know any of them that would not be in favor of that. Cause it was a very, very cool week.
It looked amazing. It really did. So tell us a little bit about that venue and the atmosphere.
So WEC, I season in Ocala now. So WEC is slowly but surely kind of becoming my like home base, for season. And it's a cool place. I remember when they first built it or started talking about building it, I was so prepared to be like, nope, it's too big. It's like, I was ready. I was ready to be one of those people, but I've got to say, they have done such an amazing job with it. And, the dressage, there's a couple shows during the like April and May where we have the big stadium, which is the one that you see in all the pictures. It's the main stadium that the hotel overlooks. And there's flags everywhere. And when you have to go down the like there's a big ramp with walls up the side that you walk down the ramp to go into the big stadium. And I tell you, it is a special feeling. And the first day that I walked in on Grayton, it was actually kind of cute. Like, when there were a bunch of other horses in there, he just cruised in. And he's very, very much a workman. He's like, knows his job, and he's not typically affected by the environment at all. And it was cute. He like walked down the ramp a little bit like, where are we going? Because as you go down the ramp, of course, everything on the sides is above your head, which is a little bit weird for the horses. And so he got to the bottom of the ramp, and he like stopped a second, and he like did a big like panoramic look around, and I felt him go, and off we went. He was like, okay, got it. But it definitely, I think I sort of did the same thing, because it's a very, very cool atmosphere to go into the big stadium. And then just to be there, like, it's such a friendly, great place. Like, the hotel's beautiful. and all the nice restaurants. And like, you can get there. The nice thing is once you get there for the week, like you potentially can just stay the whole time, you know, like you, their hotel is there. There's plenty of restaurants. You can potentially park your truck and never see it again for the week.
Yeah. It's amazing. And I mean, mm-hmm. you winter now in Ocala, right?
I do. So this is home. Yep. That is, it's home base for now. Yep.
Which is great. And how often did you show this winter? Because you were really strategic. I mean, you're so smart and strategic with this horse that it's so cool. I mean, Jody and I have been friends for, oh my Lord, we're not even going to talk. Decades.
Too long.
Too long. But, and I know you and you're so methodical and you've been down this road before with some other horses. So how has that helped you sort of develop this one?
Yeah. You know, it's again, like with him, and I feel like it's different for every horse. Like I can't say that there's a right or a wrong way, but like for him, he doesn't need a million miles in the ring. So I was very strategic. I did the WEC shows. I did three WEC shows this year. Actually, I did February, March, April. We were planning the January one, and he never in his life has had an abscess, and he blew an abscess like literally the week of. It was just like this random, it popped up and it was gone just as fast as it came, but it was just the wrong week. So we ended up we did February, March, and April. And I had done one show. I had done the fall shows too, the October, November. So I basically once a month with him. I try not to do more than once a month with him. That seems to be kind of a good pattern for us. And he stays pretty comfortable with all of that. And then most of the ones I did do WEC, I was going to do one of the Wellington shows this year. But that was the one week, again, it was kind of just a bad timing week. It was the one week that they had a couple positive cases for the virus. And I thought it was the week that I had to enter. And I thought, I better not drive all the way from the top of Florida to the bottom of Florida and be the one person that spreads it, you know? And so it ended up, again, that one ended up not going anywhere and it was totally fine. But I did a better safe than sorry. So I was like very picky with the shows, mainly just for his sake, like whatever is best for him. I don't, like I said, he doesn't really need the miles. It was a little tricky with the qualifying though, because you have to have a Grand Prix and a special. You have to have two in order to have the qualifying scores. If you have at least two with the special, then you can drop a score. So there was a little bit of the strategy as far as like making sure I got three in and then having a fourth show available if I needed it, but then not necessarily being committed to it. Because you don't necessarily want to bring it down. But then I had done a few shows in the fall just to do my freestyle to make sure I had done that enough times that I was comfortable with it, all in preparation for the championships, because championships you had to do all three tests, which is sort of a rare thing, since usually you either do the Grand Prix or you do the Grand Prix and then the special, or the Grand Prix and the freestyle. But the championships, they had us do all three tests, which was also kind of an interesting thing, like in managing your horse for the week, because that's a pretty rare thing for them to have to peak three times in a week, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what's next for you guys? Do you get to go to Europe?
Well, funny you ask. I wish. So I had a great meeting with a great phone call the Tuesday after after the show. Well, on Sunday, the Sunday after the show, they had everybody that was, I don't know, they had a certain number of horses in the top. I'm not sure which top number they had come back to like meet with a vet and jog and do all of that stuff in preparation for Europe. And again, my main goal for the year was just to go to championships. Europe wasn't even on my radar, but I was like, okay. So the championships went so well that I was in the group that got asked to come on Sunday. All of that went great. And then I had a great conversation with Christine and Laura Roberts on the Tuesday after the show about like what their thoughts were for us for the summer, where we should go, all of that stuff. They didn't feel like we were quite ready for the shortlist, which, you know, I just have to leave that up to them. They have way more experience with all of this. As far as like the actual order in the Grand Prix Championships goes, I was technically, from what they said, that would be the top eight. I was technically in that group, but then there were a few other riders that were much higher in their yearly average that just random things went amok for that show. So, you know, you can't disregard that. So I can't say that I disagree with the shortlist at all. But in that conversation, they said that they wanted me to apply for the Falsterbo Nations Cup in Sweden. And I didn't realize at the time that when I did my application, there's so many different applications, that the application for the World Championships also blankets Europe, but it did not include the two Nations Cups that are over in Europe. And so when they called and asked me to put my application in, I got the feeling it was more like a formality just to get my paperwork in, versus like that they kind of felt like he would be on the team. So I did that, and then spent a week waiting because they were going to finalize the teams the next Tuesday. And so I kind of spent the next week a little bit in limbo of like, was that really just a formality? What's happening? And because they more or less said they wanted me in Falsterbo. And then it turns out that during that week when there were the applications were due, they had several last minute withdrawals. And so I made the Falsterbo Nations Cup team, but they had enough withdrawals that we can't field a team this year. So yes, I qualified for Europe, and no, I am not going to Europe. So it was this.
There will be another time, another day.
So it was a week of really a lot of excitement and a lot of planning and a lot of scheduling and logistics work. And then a little bit like the carrot was dangled in front of my face for a week and then snatched away. So, there's options for a grant, but we're not eligible for a grant because it's ages, the horse has to be 14 or under, and he's 15. So our path to Europe was on a team, and we were on a team, but there is no team to be with us.
To be on.
So,
we will have it in the future.
Are going to stay home.
We will have it in the future.
So,
well, Jody, anyway. it's been so fun to follow your journey, and it's just been amazing. And we can't wait to continue to follow your journey. You're such a horsewoman, and what you've done has been so cool to watch. And I will always be so respectful. So thank you again. Now, how can our listeners follow you online?
On Facebook, Jody Kelly, and then my website is jodykellydressage.com.
Well, we're going to have a short break brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products.
Is your horse suffering from respiratory problems like intermittent coughing, nasal discharge, seasonal allergies, poor performance, or difficulty breathing during exercise? Kentucky Performance Products has a new supplement, Airwise, that can help. Formulated using a synergistic blend of high-quality, potent antioxidants and micronutrients, Airwise is research-proven to help horses maintain healthy respiratory function. It has been shown to promote normal respiratory rates, enhance lung function, support a healthy inflammatory response in airways, and maintain immune health. To see if Airwise, available through your veterinarian, is right for your horse, speak with your vet. Visit kppusa.com or call 859-873-2974.
Well, tonight we are so happy to have Alessa Gunderson on. She is the U.S. National Dressage Champion. Girl, that's so cool to say. Welcome to the show.
I feel like we need sound makers. Yay.
I know. I was like, how do we do a drum roll? Congratulations.
Thank you.
How does it feel?
You know, it's taken a minute for it to like kind of sink in. If I'm being super honest, I even remember the conversation like the week before being like, well, I guess we can all, you know, let's try for third. Third, fourth, fifth, it's up for grabs. So let's try and get third. And so to kind of like come out as the winner of all of it, it's, I'm obviously very, very happy, but I wasn't prepared. Like, I wasn't prepared to be this happy.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. I mean, seriously, congratulations. Well, tell us about Q or Quintessential.
Yes, Quintessential. That's like his proper name. But in the barn, his name is Q. Also, we have a little joke. When he's a bad boy, his name is Cucifer. When he's a good boy, his name is Qbert. And we always say that when it all goes right in the ring, it's Q-phoria.
Q-phoria. Q-phoria was like, Q-phoria was like on display.
Yeah, that was on display that week. So cool. Q-phoria, Qbert, he was there for it that week. And it's amazing to kind of achieve something as big as that. And it was a long week. It was an exhausting week for everyone. The buildup was exhausting. So it was really incredible to have him basically like peak and shine in one of the hardest weeks, which you never know until you do a championship like that. So I was absolutely thrilled. And of course, it's extra special because he's been my guy from the beginning. I rode his mom when I was a little young rider.
Really?
So cool. I got his mom had her as a young rider mare, and she unfortunately had a little injury in a trailer, and she came back fine, but she never quite was right. So fortunately, being a mare, we decided that we would breed her. And he was actually her last baby. So I decided to keep him. Fortunately it turned out to be a great decision. But I've been there from the start. I was there when he was born. It's a little extra special, I think, a little bit also surreal, because I'm like, wow, there's that really ugly chestnut. Like, my little ugly duckling.
Well, he is quite a swan now. My goodness, my friend.
Yeah, no, he's really, it's very special. It's special anyway, but it's like extra special. And I think if, you know, the people around us and the people that see us every day, they know just how special it is. I'm very lucky.
And if you could describe him in three words, what would they be?
I don't know why, but the first word that came to mind was lapdog. He is lapdog, underdog. I don't know why I'm thinking dogs now, but lapdog, underdog, and honestly, like best friend, because he's just like a lot of these top horses. Interesting. Like, a lot of these top horses, I feel like they're kind of, I don't know, they're not like cute and puppy like, and they're like impressive in the stall, and they stand all big and they look like these big stallions. But if you see Q in the stall, he's just like the sweetest, just cuddliest little thing. And he's probably more scared of, you know, when I open a soda can, he's like, oh my gosh. He's just a very delicate little thing. But then when you bring him into a ring, or when you start to get him to work, it's a completely another creature. It's actually really incredible to
see
that.
Awesome. That is awesome. That is really, really cool. So,
but I guess I should stop calling him an underdog, huh?
Right? I was just going to say, that was literally going to be my next question, was like, okay, you were very strategic about getting yourself to the national championships. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I really have been working with my team, and my team consists of Allie Brock, Caroline Rothman, and my husband, Henrik. You know, that's kind of the three people I work with. And in the last 2 years, we've really spent a lot of time developing him, like his confidence and his reliability in the ring. You know, he's so talented. Since he was 9 years old, I don't think that horse has ever scored like under 72 or something like this. He's just so talented. But we knew that to have a great horse in the future, we needed to build his confidence in the ring. So 2 years ago, I think it already started. Maybe without the championship as like the goal, because we didn't know that was happening yet. But we really tried to kind of hide a little bit in the back rings, we call it, you know, hide a little bit in the national rings here, which is very hard to do in Wellington. You know, go to the Jim Brandon shows and just kind of build him up without the spotlight and without people really knowing what was going on. And then last year, I remember in one of my sessions where sometimes all three of them will come and we'll just like put our brains together. And I remember being like, so what do we do next? Like, what's up? What's next? And Allie said, you know, we should really aim for this championship that's happening next year. And then it was great. I'm much better when I have a goal. And so we essentially devised this plan for the next year where we just slowly built him up and kind of stayed away from big events and big shows in Wellington and situations, even clinics where he would really be kind of pressured into asking for more, and just keep it small, keep it confident, and then trust that when we needed him to come out for the championship, that he would be there. And that's really difficult to do as a dressage rider. I think it's very much a jumper mentality. You never see a jumper, you know, they rarely jump meter 60 courses at home, and they do a lot of exercises to build up. But rarely in dressage, I feel like you see that a lot of the times. And I've watched a lot of top riders and trainers, and at home and even at small shows, they're asking for maximum effort. They're asking for a 9, an 8. And we really took the opposite approach where we didn't do that. And we just gained his trust and gained his confidence. And when we needed it, and when we needed him to give us those, you know, amazing moments, he was just, yes, ma'am. He said, absolutely, like whatever you want. And that really showed in the championship week. So it couldn't have gone any better. And I'm even shocked myself that it was going like the championship week. I had the cleanest tests I'd ever ridden. And
just, I love it.
You know, with all the pressure, and is always pressure in a championship when everyone's watching. You're being watched all the time, and your trainings, you're being watched. We really stuck to our plan and didn't change anything, and really focused on what we had to do. And he just did it in the ring. So
that is so cool. So tell us, what's the plan now?
The plan now, which we, you know, our plan was always to try to get to Europe this summer.
Yes.
Things kind of got shaken up with the shortlist and Aachen and all these things. But the plan now is that we go to Europe for summer. Yay. We just found out today that was okay.
Yes!
And we get to show, hopefully two shows over there. So we'll be showing in Hagen. We're not exactly sure which division, because there's actually three CDIs going on at the same time. There's a Nations Cup, a 4-star, and a 3-star. So we are hoping, or we know we're going to get a spot. We're just not sure which division we'll have a spot in. But one of the reasons why that show is so important to me is it's another show where all the Americans are going to be at, and it gives us an opportunity to kind of ride with the others and against the others, but also learn what it's like to be with the team and kind of learn this, you know, the team procedures, the staff, and what it's like being over there. And I think that's so important for me and for anyone that has never done that before and they're used to just being on their own. I think it's really like a great opportunity to learn that. And then second show after that, which we're still kind of deciding which one, but that will, you know, make the trip kind of worth it to be able to go over there. Cause it's a hefty cost.
Yes.
Since we're having to do it on our own. But we do have, Youssef is putting together like a grant, which is also an amazing thing I want to mention. Sorry.
Yes. Let's talk about that. And the GoFundMe. Let's do all of that.
So I spoke with a few of the higher powers in USA Dressage, and including Christine Traurig, who has been so supportive of us. And I said to them, you know, I think it's really important that we support these younger combinations and these greener combinations to be able to get experience in Europe, and also to be able to do it even if they are not like fully sponsored or they don't have a very big sponsor helping them financially. It's a shame when there's actually really great horses and riders in different parts of the US that we need to support because they're not able to financially get over to Europe and get the experience and become the best version of themselves. So Youssef has been amazing, and they're going to put this grant together, which I hope will stay for years to come.
It's wonderful.
Hopefully, you know, I know it's going to help me this summer, but hopefully it will, you know, highlight and spotlight a lot of those up and coming combinations that need to get that experience and then are amazing, like team candidates. So that's super. And then I started a GoFundMe, which has an incredible response already on day one.
Yes.
I've been like, I was really nervous to do it because it's like always so weird to
sure
do something like that. But I'm realizing just how many people wanted a way or a platform to help, and they just didn't know how. And this kind of allowed them to say, "Hey, I stand behind like this and what you're doing, and I think we need to support like these riders like myself to go over and get the experience and get the opportunities."
Yeah. I love it. I love it. So how do people find the GoFundMe? Let's help. Come on. Yay. We love that. We're a whole team effort here.
I know. I was like, I don't know if I want to plug it. I was like, is that weird if I plug it?
Yes. No, we want to plug it. So okay. People want to join.
Yeah. So I have a link on my Instagram. My Instagram is Aless_Jordan. There is a link on the profile that you can go to on my Facebook. So many people have shared it today, which is incredible. But we will, the goal is 25,000, which hopefully USEF will match. If it's a little less, that's fine. But we did the budgeting, and it does cost between 50,000 to 60,000 to be able to do a Europe trip.
Yeah.
So,
let's get more than that. Cause I was going to say, right? Honestly, that's like the flight.
Yeah, exactly. The flight, we all know, you know, fuel has gone up, but the flight there is a little bit cheaper to go there. But then on the way back, like the flight here is around 20,000. So just the flights alone is already a huge like undertaking. And then to be there, you know, there's so many things. There's stabling, there's logistics, like cars, transport, hotels for people. It's a lot to deal with there. And then I always say it's also, people also realize someone like me that does this, it's a job, and we have family and we have a business. We're also leaving our business. We're leaving students or horses in training. So that has to be accounted for. And I have a great team at home, and I'm bringing in some really amazing people that are going to help me at home. But you know, I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have the ability to take or to bring in people like that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, again, congratulations on everything. We are so excited to follow you this summer. How can we follow you online? And one more time with the GoFundMe.
So yes, best place to follow me online is going to be on my Instagram, which is Aless_Jordan. That's where you'll find the GoFundMe link. And then also I will be sharing on there everything from the flight, like from going from my barn to Miami. I will be flying with Q because I have to stare at him.
I think it's fine. Yeah.
Cargo with him. I'll be showing, you know, sharing all of it, going to the base stable where we'll be based with other US riders. And then all the exciting things about competing in Europe, because I think people don't know the behind the scenes of what it's like over there. We have a great circuit here with all the different shows in the US, but it's amazing to see how the European shows run, and it's a lot of fun, and hopefully it will inspire others to go take a big leap over the pond and experience that for themselves. Even to watch. I'm hoping, you know, a lot of people consider going to Europe to watch these shows, because over there it's actually a really big spectator event. Aachen, obviously the most famous that people will go to, but there's a lot of great shows in Europe that really draw a super spectating crowd.
It's so true. Well, thank you so much. We can't wait to follow you, and good luck all summer.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Hopefully I'll make everybody that supported us proud.
Yeah, girl, get after it.
You will.
We will do our best.
Well, Megan, I am working on the book Fur Mama by Diana DuPont. We're excited about our webinar coming up shortly for the book club. We hope you guys are all enjoying that book. And if you don't have it, grab it before we start our book club, all our fun little segments. So we would love that. If you've not yet subscribed yet, do it now. Just search Dressage Radio Show on your favorite podcast player. You can join the fun and supportive community of the Horse Radio Network auditors on Patreon. You'll get behind-the-scenes insights, special offers, and opportunity to participate in Horse Radio Network podcasts. Go to patreon.com/horseradionetwork. Facebook page is the Dressage Radio Show. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
And my website is lindenhoff.com, and my email is lindenhoffllc@gmail.com. We'd like to thank our friends and show sponsors, Farnham and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, and Kentucky Performance Products. Keep on kicking on. Until the next show, talk to you soon.